Eugene Garrell is General Manager of Health and Community Engagement at iCare, leading initiatives to improve mental health outcomes. He was a mental health nurse in the past and spent 40-odd years in government health and social services in Britain and Australia. And he's also a member of the Mental Health Advisory Council, highlighting issues that affect the mental health and well-being of the people of New South Wales. And mental health is certainly a major challenge for iCare and one that's taken on. Please welcome Eugene.
So before I start, I would just like to acknowledge Julian. I've known Julian for maybe 2 years. I met Julian. That's the first time I've really heard his story. And it takes a significant amount of courage to talk to people in a group like this and to share their story. And there's an enormous amount of vulnerability. So I want to thank Julian for that. Personally, I got a lot out of that, and I'm sure other people did too. So thank you very much. You already know the answer because I saw the slide. But mentally healthy workplaces are good for the economy. It's good for business. We know it's also good for workers. It's good for their families, and it's good for community. In fact, it's a win-win for everyone. But how are we doing? Are we able to provide mentally healthy workplaces across Australia? And if not, why not? So I started my career back in 1979 as a nurse, a mental health nurse. And my first day at work was in a mental health hospital in a place called Stafford, which is in the middle of the UK. And they called it a hospital, but really it was an asylum. And the people that I was looking after, they didn't have a mental illness anymore. They were institutionalized. And there were people there that had been there 30 years, women in particular, who were there only because they'd had a child out of wedlock. And there were so many stories like that. And what surprised me about those days is how quickly it took me to accept that as the norm, not to be able to challenge that we were actually institutionalizing people because they had a mental illness. The asylum, as I like to call it, was also next door to the abattoir, and next door to the prison, Stafford Prison. You've probably heard of Stafford Prison. It's where Rolf Harris spent some time recently. And it was outside of the town itself, so out of mind, out of sight, out of mind. I've seen a lot of changes in the last, how many years is that? Too many to think about. Since then, changes in attitude, changes into the way that we treat and care people with mental illness, but also changes in the fact that people like Julian are able to come up and talk about their experiences. So stigma's reduced, but I think we've still got a long way to go. Mental health in the workplace is probably a really good opportunity for us to really make the next level, next step change. According to the National Mental Health Commission, mental illness costs the economy $56.7 billion. So that's 3.5% of GDP. Recently in the Australian Financial Review, you may have read that the disability insurance schemes in Australia had a blowout of $377 million. Now that is going to continue to rise, and I have a hypothesis about that, and I'm sure everybody else has their own hypotheses. Is the prevalence of mental illness increasing? Some will talk about social media having an impact on young people, drugs and alcohol, loss of community. And in fact, most of us have replaced our community at home with community at work. And then when we're not working and we don't work, like Julian's story, then we actually lose community. And so work can be used actually as a tool for recovery. Or is it because we've lost the stigma and more people are talking about mental illness, more and more people are hearing about mental illness, and it's accepted that ourselves or our families may actually suffer from a mental illness or have lived experience? I don't know the answer. The issue here, though, is that we in the insurance space have a choice. We can either decide that this is too tough to tackle, that we should stop insuring people with a mental illness or mental health issues. That would be a bad thing to do, in my view. Or we can use this as an opportunity. If mental illness is costing the GDP that amount, this is an opportunity for us to increase productivity and our economy if we get it right. So what do we need to do? there's a lot being done. And in New South Wales last week, Safe Work New South Wales hosted a summit for mental healthy workplaces. The summit brought together businesses, insurance schemes, community, government and non-government organisations to co-design a new way of working or alliance in New South Wales. What was interestingly, though, is that in the first day of that presentation, we were hearing again and again and again about what's happening in Australia. And what struck me was that rather than each state and territory working separately on this issue, that we might actually get better outcomes if we work together on this issue. So what I'm going to do today is to just really outline some of the issues that came out at that summit and sort of throw that back to you, but also look at the nature of mental health in its complex form and make a call for collective action. So this framework was developed by Associate Professor Sam Harvey and his colleagues, which really showed at the top line, the journey of somebody who may or may not have a mental health issue. Now, we know it's not linear. We know that somebody can be a healthy worker one minute and sick the next minute. So this isn't really to describe that journey. But it's there to say that people are always on the spectrum. And that spectrum needs us to adapt our interventions to meet people wherever they are on that spectrum. And what they've done is they've identified six key interventions, ranging from designing and managing work and minimising stress and harm, right through to increasing awareness of mental health and reducing stigma. That's a useful framework, and it's a framework that any CEO or board can adopt and look at and identify how they might develop strategies for their own workplace. So we're going to do a poll. Now, and the question in the poll is, the importance of mental well-being is well understood in my workplace, and my employer has excellent values and processes in place that deal with mental health issues. So the question will come up on your apps, and if you could answer that question, that would be great. So I'm guessing it's a yes or no answer. Safe Work New South Wales presented this data last week, and it shows that more than half, not more, just under half of employers that were surveyed are either intending to take action or have a basic awareness around mental health issues. That, for me, proposes that there is a significant potential if we got more workplaces to develop mentally healthy workplaces. You can see only 8.8% of workplaces have integrated and sustained approaches. What was interesting, though, is that there are so many interventions out there, and I don't know if you've come across them, but from mindfulness to CBT, cognitive behaviour therapy, to return to work, stress management courses, resilience courses, there's loads of programmes out there selling their wares. What they've done through there was a return on investment study that was done as part of the summit. And out of that, they identified a whole range of interventions on whether they were returning on investment. And they broke that down between small and medium-sized enterprises and large enterprises. And it was interesting that not every organization gets the same impact from every intervention, which I think is intuitive for me anyway. The psychological return to work evidence was quite clear that if people are injured, whether it's a mental health or physical injury, that adapting a psychological return to work program using cognitive behavior therapy has nearly a $4 to $1 return on investment. That's for both small-sized and large enterprises, which is significant, I would have thought. CBT is also something that delivers a good ROI. The issue with CBT, though, is that if CBT is delivered by clinicians that adapt the program to their own specific expertise, then that's not as effective. It's often more effective to have somebody who's got no clinical background to learn CBT and really have the fidelity to that program. So we know things work, and we know things can provide the return on investment, and we know that it can help people get better. It's very easy to think of mental health and mental illness as a simple or even a complicated issue. This is the Kinnifin framework, which is a decision-making tool for policy makers and for decision makers. And it really identifies problems in one of four characteristics. And once you understand the nature of that problem, you can then adapt your intervention to solve that problem. We know that simple problems such as making or baking a cake, for example, is very simple to follow. That's easy, and we're able to do that. But complicated issues and complex issues are often confused with each other. So with complicated issues, we can put a man on the moon, and we know how to do it. We just follow A, B, and C, and we can actually put a man on. It's not easy to do, but it's complicated. There's a science around it. There's an evidence about it. But with complex issues, we need a more adaptive approach. And insurance, I think we're very good at the technical, but we're not so good at the adaptive. And what I've noticed is that insurances are going out there and looking at how can we create social value in community. We can't do that by using technical approaches. We need to do that by being adaptive. Mental health or mental illness is a complex issue. We need to make sure that workplaces don't make people more sick. We need to make sure and understand that actually somebody's mental illness is due to a whole range of things. It may be due to their family breakdown, marriage breakdown, maybe due to drugs and alcohol use, or it might be genetic, or a whole range of issues that might surround that person. So we need to make sure that if we want people to return to work, we need to make and take complex responses to that. So the evidence base about what works is great, but we also need to make sure that we understand that in the context of community and how we adapt our approaches with community. So my call out really is that we need to create alliances. There's a lot of work going on in this space. I don't know if your LinkedIn pages are the same as mine, but there's a lot of evidence and a lot of activity happening. But we need to be clear about who's going to do what, both at statewide and national level. If we're all doing the same thing, we're just going to bump into each other. And what's going to work? Are we going to make sure that we prioritize and invest in what's going to work? Where are we going to work together on? And what are we going to not do? And I think that's probably the hardest question. What are we going to not do? So a collective approach is something that I would really endorse. The other side of this, of course, is that people with mental illness are finding it difficult to get work in Australia. We know that people with disability and mental illness, the fact that they work will help them in their recovery and their social inclusion, and that will have a knock-on effect on the economy and the community. But Australia is the 19th out of 20 OECD countries in terms of participation rates for people with disability and mental illness. So I'd make a call for us to proactively go out there and recruit people with a mental illness. High level, low prevalence disorders, both. It's something that we really need to do if we really want to make a difference in our community. Finally, I just want to talk about this element of trust. If we are going to make a difference in that space, we need to be trusted. Community needs to trust insurance schemes and disability schemes. At the moment, they don't. And my hypothesis about that is that we're not demonstrating trust to community. And if we look at the workers' compensation system as a whole, if you get an injury at home, you take charge of your recovery. You go to your own GP, you decide which physiotherapist you go to, and you're really in charge. But if you're in the workers' compensation system, you've got to ask for permission. Will the scheme pay for this? Will the scheme pay for that? Is that provider accredited? And all of a sudden, you're disempowered. If we're going to have a scheme that's going to be trusted and is going to really be a true partner in achieving the outcomes that we want in the mental health space, then we need to create trust. I think we need to reimagine insurance as a tool to leverage healthy workplaces. Thank you very much.